Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, where successful women have paved the road to their own financial freedom. Each week, your host, Hillary Hendershot, financial coach, money mindset expert, and experienced wealth manager, will help you discover the keys to the wealth and peace of mind you want and deserve in her no-nonsense and authentic style. Starting right now.
Hey, Profit Boss, it's your host, Hillary Hendershot. It has been a podcast interview party over here at the Hendershot Home Podcast Recording Studio. I have been interviewing some of the coolest people, and you know, the reason is I am putting two shows in the can. That is media speak. Now you just learn something when you get something recorded. If it's video or audio, we say in the can, and that's the like the old film canisters like that. And the reason is because I am getting ready to go on maternity leave. If you're not with us in the Profit Boss Facebook group, you may not know that I am preggers, 7 months right now as I record this, as I speak this into the microphone, getting ready for my first daughter. My husband and I have been married for 2 years and we're so excited. And, you know, I'm going to have a business that runs itself while I'm gone. It's going to be seamless for my clients. And I'm super proud of the organization and strategies that we've put together as a team to cover, make sure all the clients get taken care of and like that. But in the meantime, I need to make sure you have episodes to listen to while I'm out getting to know the wee one. So just letting you in a little bit on Hillary's life over here. And it was a super pleasure to talk with my guest today, Shanna Landolt. Shanna is fantastic. She is the founder of Secrets from a Headhunter and president of the Landolt Group. That is an executive search firm. She's based in Toronto, Canada. She's been featured as a LinkedIn and career expert on NBC, Fox, ABC, CBS, CTV, City TV, and the Life Network. She's a media expert. She's a twice over best-selling author. She wrote LinkedIn Secrets from a Top Executive Recruiter, and she's going to share some of those secrets with you in the interview. And she also co-wrote a book with none other than Jack Canfield. He's prolific. He wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul. The book she co-wrote with him is called The Soul of Success. You can see a link to it in the show notes for this episode at hillaryhendershot.com/16. Shanna has more than 15 years of recruitment experience. She's interviewed thousands of candidates and she's placed hundreds of people in six-figure jobs. So she really knows what she's talking about. She has some solid advice that she's very confident about. In this episode, we talk about why you should have the confidence to negotiate your salary 100% of the time you get to that job offer phase. Shanna was very specific about that number. Why non-monetary compensation can be just as valuable as dollars. The personality trait that gets companies to go above their pay range to hire a candidate. Wouldn't you like to know what that is? I've got that for you today. What are the best days to ask your boss for a raise? The best way to make sure your profile comes up on the first page of search results on LinkedIn, so you can stand out amongst all the other millions of job seekers on LinkedIn, and how to maximize your money from your LinkedIn presence. And then Shanna did the coolest thing I've ever had a guest do on this show at the end of the episode, at the end of the interview. And you are just going to have to listen to the whole golden episode to find out what it is. I love bringing you practical tips to make money. I think asking for a raise and negotiating are two skills that every woman should have and know. And I'm excited to bring you this interview with Shanna Landolt. So after you listen to the episode, if you decide to negotiate for a salary or ask for a raise, I want you to come over to the Profit Boss Facebook group, the closed private community, and share with us how it went. You can link to that group, which is a closed group. It's totally supportive and awesome. The group in there is fantastic. We talk about everything from taxes to inspiration and real estate and investing and like that. You can find a link to that group. Just go to HillaryHendershot.com/Profit Boss. HillaryHendershot.com/Profit Boss takes you right over to that Facebook group. Request entrance. We'll let you right in and you can join the discussion. And so let's not delay. Let's get right to it. Here's Shanna Landolt. Shanna Landolt, welcome to Profit Boss Radio.
Hillary, it's great to be here today.
Shanna, how did you get into the field of executive search or headhunting?
Well, that's an interesting question, Hillary. I started off my career as an actress in musical theater. So that had nothing to do with headhunting.
I thought you were going to tie it in. I was like, okay, I'm waiting.
But I knew I loved people. And I'd come back from a year of performing on a cruise ship, singing and dancing in the Mediterranean. And I lived in Toronto. And there was no theater work at that time. Everything that was being produced that was a big show was being brought in. And I had started a summer theater company, which ran for 2 years, and I had done a lot of public relations and fundraising work. And I thought, boy, maybe I could get into public relations. And I started interviewing with different recruiters or headhunters. And every single person I met with said, you should be a recruiter. You should be a headhunter. And finally, one person too many said, you should do this. And I thought, okay, I'm going to listen to this. The universe is telling me something.
How funny.
And so I went into recruitment.
Okay. And so I get that you are an executive placement expert, and that is what a lot of people refer to as a headhunter or recruiter, and that you really are experienced at getting people into the job. But how do you become an expert on asking for a raise? Are you there for that part of the process?
I am. So in a raise, for example, what I'm doing is I'm asking for a raise from what somebody used to earn at their previous company to then a raise in their new position. Now, the same fundamentals apply when somebody's asking for a raise at a current company. So it's, you know, I've certainly coached and mentored and spoken with hundreds of people through that process of going and asking for a raise. And there's times when I'll speak with a candidate and I know that what they're motivated by is money and not really the job itself. So I'll coach them through going and asking their existing company or their existing employer to give them a raise.
Wow. Okay, great. And so what, if I can, I maybe went out of order a little bit there, but let's step back into what it's like to be a headhunter. What's life like to you? I really love to highlight women who have powerful roles so that other women can hear some of what's possible in terms of career. I think executive search is amazing. It's an amazing field to be in. I shared before with you that it's actually a career I considered, and I know that, you know, it's possible to be flexible and lucrative and or both. So would you give us a sense of what's a day like in your world?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's a fantastic career for women, and particularly a lot of recruitment firms allow people to work from their home offices. So for women who are, you know, maybe dealing with children or schedules, I have a lot of flexibility. I set my own hours. I work as hard as I want or as long as I want or as little as I want, which is great. And the harder I work, the more money I make. The less I work, the less money I make. But in a typical day, there's everything from doing internet research to determine which candidates are appropriate for a job that I'm recruiting for, to speaking with clients that I'm working on assignments for or interviewing candidates. And then there's the whole process of business development and letting people know that my firm exists and that we're here to serve them. It's a little bit like being a matchmaker, because first I have to find a client that has a need for a role, but then I have to find a candidate that is perfect for that role. And then the two of them have to fall in love. So even if, you know, they really are both perfect, if they don't fall in love, then I've got to find somebody else.
And you, and I think it is common in your field to specialize in a particular industry. And I think you specialize in biotech and pharmaceuticals. Is that right?
That's right. The reason that recruiters specialize in an industry is you really get to know people inside of that industry and you can create a reputation for yourself. There's certain areas of my market where I know every single candidate. You know, for example, in pharmaceutical advertising, I know every single candidate pretty much. Wow. In the geographic area that I do a lot of work in. Whereas if I said, hey, I'm a general recruiter, every search I would be starting from scratch. Whereas it's nice to be able to know people and have an ongoing relationship with them over a number of years.
Right. So in that sense, instead of cold searching on LinkedIn, for example, maybe when you're speaking with someone who has a job opening, maybe you already have someone in mind.
And often I do.
Really efficient for you.
Yes.
And so back in the day when I was considering the field, headhunters or recruiters charged about 25 to 30% of like first year comp. I'm just trying to give people a sense of what's possible to place a candidate. Is that still approximately the going rate?
Probably the going rate went down a little bit during the recession. So okay. I'd say
My consideration of this field was a while ago. Yes.
Right. No, but anywhere from 18% to 30% is common. And 30% would be if you're doing a retained search for a CEO. Mm-hmm. And 18% would be for a middle manager, you know, sort of more junior level. And then 20 to 25% is the most common.
What's a retained search?
So a retained search is where a company is engaging you and they're giving you a portion of your fee up front. So it's usually a third. And almost all of the business that I do is retained. So that means my clients are counting on me to go and they're willing to put their money on the line to trust me to do that.
So now this right away, when I'm picturing what it's like to be you, I hear in my mind's eye, you are asking for a job from people who have jobs to offer candidates. So you're asking, can I be your recruiter? And then you're saying, hey, not only, you know, now I'm going to fill this position for you, but I need you to pay me some upfront. So did you have to build courage to do that?
I did. And what I found is if you ask for it and are just firm in your ask, most of the time people say yes.
Okay, good. So even if you are might be feeling a lack of confidence, you could still essentially fake firmness. You could fake firmness and it tends to be effective in your experience.
It does. And there's times when companies have policies about which level they'll work on retainer or not. But if I work on a retainer or exclusively with a client, there's something like a 93 or 94% chance that I will fill that role. Whereas if there's multiple recruiters working on the same assignment, I'll have a 13 to 17% chance of filling it. And those just aren't odds that I want to invest my time in.
Right. So it makes you not really want to sprint to win the race, knowing there's a low chance you're actually going to get paid.
Right.
Not to mix
because you only really get paid either by a retainer at the beginning to initiate a project or at the end after your successful candidate has accepted the job.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, good. Thanks for giving the Profit Boss Radio audience a sense of what it's like to be you. I think you've achieved a lot of success, and so it's great of you to share it. I'll move into negotiating salary, if that's okay. And I just want to start by talking about that specifically and then move to asking for a raise. And then I'll ask you if there are differences between those two skills. So should you always try to negotiate your salary when someone offers you a job?
100%. Every single time.
Okay. And how do you start that? Do you let them know up front, I'm going to be negotiating, or do you wait for them to land an offer in your inbox, or how does that go?
Well, I think you always have more power when you are talking about numbers first. So when you're working with a recruiter, the recruiter will ask what your current compensation is. And it's important to let the recruiter know because they're negotiating on your behalf, just like a sports agent would. But then when you're just at that moment where you think the offer is going to be coming soon, that's where you really want to sit down with the recruiter or with the company if you're going directly and start to talk about, you know, where they see you fitting within their salary range. And if the company is never going to lead with their best offer, because they're always going to hope that you'll accept what they offer. And they're going to leave a little bit of room in case you come back and say, you know, I'd like to have 2K more or 3K more, or how about this? If they lead with their best offer, they've got no room to negotiate. So they never lead with their best offer.
Okay. So you have to assume it's like the implicit rules of the game. We are negotiating now.
That's right.
Okay. So are you an employer, Shanna?
I'm not. I work with contractors, so I don't have anybody who works directly for me. And I love that model for me. I used to have employees and I didn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. But I was going to ask you how you would turn, you know, what you've learned about being an employee on yourself, being an employer. But, you know, it's interesting that you say that companies always enter into the negotiation expecting or giving themselves a little wiggle room. The last time I had a corporate job, they told me what my salary was. And I said, you know, I think the words I said were, when do we negotiate? I think that's actually what I said. And they said, well, you know, we don't. This is it. And the impact on me was, I was already a contractor at that company. And they said, you know, the contract is up. You need to take this full-time position. It was about a 40% pay cut.
Wow.
They were really excited about the benefits. But I was like 26 years old or 25 years old, you know, and I didn't care about the benefits. And so the impact on me of them not being willing to negotiate at all was, I took the job and I started looking for a new job right away. And they were really upset when I left. And I said to myself, I mean, I didn't really say to them, but I thought, how could you think I would be okay with a 40% pay cut and not go look for something else?
That's right.
You know? Okay. So they land a job offer in your inbox. And then what's your next step? Is it a voice call? Is it an email? And do you then start at the top of what you want, or do you start at the top of what you think their range is?
If whatever number you start at, that is the top. So for example, if they've made you an offer and the offer is $85,000 and you say 87, but really you want 89, it's never going to go above 87.
Right, because they're not going to come back.
They're not going to come back and go higher. So yeah. You have to start with what it is that you really want. And you might even have that number be higher than what you really want, because they'll negotiate down a little bit.
Right. And now what if they ask you during the interview process, what would you like to make, or what are you making now? And is there a meaningful difference between those two questions?
There is a meaningful difference between the two. So if they ask what you're making now, it's interesting. A lot of negotiation books will say, oh, don't say that number, or say, oh, you know, can we continue with the interview process and you'll see what my value is. In my experience, it's not how the real world works when it comes to negotiating, because most companies have salary brackets or salary bands. And so a recruiter would know, and a company would know, given, you know, your experience, given the amount of time you have in your field and what your skill set is, they would know the range of your worth. So it's not necessarily a secret. The question is, where exactly in that range are you going to fall? So what I recommend that people do is have a real sense of clarity about what they'd love as an offer and then what they would be willing to accept and be happy with. So first of all, when you say what your current compensation is, you want to remember to include everything. So it's not just what's your base salary, but what's your base salary? What is your bonus? When is your bonus paid out? So for example, if you accepted a new job in January, but your bonus doesn't get paid out until March, you're leaving that bonus on the table unless you negotiate a signing bonus with your new employer. There might be other benefits, like if your company has a gym right inside the organization and you're not having to pay for a gym membership, or if they do RSP matching or they match any sort of savings plan, you want to make sure that you can then go in and say, all right, this is worth X amount this year. So I recommend opening up an Excel file or an email and literally breaking down everything that you get, all of the perks that you get, and assigning a dollar value beside that.
I was just going to say that it sounds like you should have a number in mind when you go to the first interview of total monetary compensation, and you calculate that by adding up monetary and non-monetary.
That's right. Now, you want to make sure that the recruiter or the company is clear about all of the different parts of it. Because if you quote your total value and you've added everything in, that may be way over what their base salary is. So it's really important to say, here's my base salary, here's what this is worth, here's what this is worth. Or you can even say, would it make it easier if I break down my total compensation for you and send it to you in an email? If you don't have those numbers right there, you can follow up with them afterwards.
And that's, in your opinion, that's just as powerful and effective?
It is.
Okay. All right, good.
And why that's powerful and effective is when they're putting together an offer, they're going to then look at every single thing that's a part of your package to make sure that theirs is competitive with what they're offering you.
Right. And so let me ask you, this is a qualitative or kind of an intangible in the negotiations process, but I have always entered into negotiations. Internally, I've made up my mind, who wants it more? And I don't know if we can put a price tag on this or, you know, for example, if you have been looking for a job for so long, you're desperate to get out of this job or you really need to start work, then the pay range is what the pay range is. But truly, like if you need a job, then you want it more. And this puts you in a down position in terms of the negotiation. Is that something that can be quantified or how would you recommend someone think about that while not giving everything up, you know, sure, but still come to a mutually agreeable outcome?
Here's a really great strategy for that. So let's imagine it's a scenario where you are out of work and you want the job, you want it really badly, and you still want to be able to negotiate. So what you say is, first of all, I want you to know I am really excited about this opportunity, and it's my intention that we come to an agreement that works for both of us because I would love to work here. As you know, I've been interviewing and there are other opportunities that I've been exploring, and I want to make sure that, you know, any offer that we come to is competitive and I'm committed to have it work here.
Oh, so you're showing a couple of cards. You're saying, I really like this. I want it to work here. I'm letting you know that I'm in it. I'm in it with you. And it's not my only opportunity.
Exactly. And even if you don't have something else that you're actively interviewing for, you're still considering other opportunities. If you look at a LinkedIn job, you're considering it.
Right. And then let's put the shoe on the other foot. What if you're, you know, for example, my sister-in-law is a standout in her industry. She's just, she's well known. She's sought after. She often has employers doing a tug of war for her. This is a situation where maybe the employer wants it more. How can you maximize that? Or how do you advise a candidate in that position?
What I would say to someone in that position is, first of all, to make sure that they truly are interested in the opportunity. You know, if they're happy where they are and they see a great future, you don't always, you know, I don't recommend leaving just for money. So there has to be something about the role that motivates you, that's exciting for you, that you'd feel good about it. So first of all, you want to make sure that those things are there. But if you're in that scenario where you don't have to leave your current job and you really would be fine either way, you've got a lot of power in your negotiation. And you can say, listen, I'm interested. Here's what I like about your company. Here's what I like about this role. Here's why I would get really excited about it. But I also want to let you know, I'm happy where I am. I wasn't looking to make a move. So if you're interested in me, you are really going to have to put together your best competitive offer. And I promise you that I'll seriously take a look at it and entertain it.
Okay. So, and this brings up something my husband, who's an excellent negotiator, always says is let them make the first offer. Are you a fan of that strategy?
Not necessarily.
You're hesitating.
It really, really depends. What you have to remember about that first offer is that first offer, it becomes the base or the benchmark that you negotiate from. So if they make the first offer in regards to salary and you're in a scenario where you don't have to leave, you could say, listen, I would not leave for anything less than, and you can give a number. It could even be a stretch number. And they can come back and say, are you open to a little bit of wiggle room? Or if they say, wow, that number is just out of our range, you can say, well, tell me what, you know, what is your range? What would you consider? Now, if you have a recruiter, and let's imagine you're a candidate that's negotiating a job offer, you can feel the recruiter out by asking really direct questions. Mm-hmm. So you can say to the recruiter, listen, where do you think they see me inside of their range? What is the range? What could we do that would have me get in the highest, you know, part of that range? Would this be too much of a stretch? So the recruiter, and when you start asking the recruiter questions like that, you can feel them out, and the recruiter can feel out their client and see, you know, approximately where do they imagine presenting the offer? Because the client company will ask the recruiter most times, how do you feel about this offer before it's presented?
Right, because you are kind of playing go-between. I mean, it is your job to make people love each other, fall in love, as you said, and you don't want any offer to be way out of the ballpark. That makes people feel uncomfortable and probably doesn't make your day.
And there are times where I've had clients present lowball offers, and I've said to my client, listen, I'm telling you, this is the wrong offer. I don't think we should present it. Here's why. I want you to go back to your executive committee and see if you can get 5K more or 6K more. Because if a client company presents a lowball offer, then the candidate might accept it, but they're not going to feel good about it.
Okay, so what are the things in your experience that cause a company to go beyond the pay range that they had in mind?
It really is the energy and personality of the individual. So this is a case where they have fallen in love. And it's not always a candidate's skill set. It's not always what they've accomplished. Often it's their EQ, their excitement about the role, their ability to communicate their passion. If you have two people and one is passionate and the other is equally competent but less passionate, the one with passion will almost always move forward in the process and get the offer.
Wow.
And that could be passion from following up. You'd be surprised how few candidates actually take the time that same day to send a thank you email. You'd expect it, but people don't always do it.
I bet you coach your candidates to do that then.
I do.
Okay, good. So then let's fast forward a little bit in the career timeline. How do you know when it's time to ask for a raise? And can you ask for a raise just because you want it? Or does it have to be because you think you deserve it or your the pay range has changed?
It can be for all of those reasons. And there doesn't even particularly have to be a reason for you to ask for a raise that's the right reason or the wrong reason. It literally can be that you've had a change in responsibilities. It could be that the company has downsized. They've let go of three people in your department and you're now doing double the workload. It could be that you've gained some new skills and you think you're more valuable now. It could be that you've had a series of wins. Ultimately, I think that there has to be something that can justify you asking for that raise.
Okay. You know, I've been checking out you have a lot of media interviews and you've published a lot on this topic. And I have to tell you, I thought in corporate America that asking for a raise was a very technical process. You really needed to understand the budget constraints. You needed to understand some things that seemed out of reach to me. But what I've gotten, and you can confirm this, is that it's far more qualitative than that at all. In fact, you know, you said passion and energy get people higher compensated. So do you need to understand the complexities of deep corporate, multi-layered corporate budgets, or should you just go for it?
You should just go for it.
Okay.
If every person said, wow, I need to sit back and understand the budget, they'd never ask for a raise.
Right. I mean, that's what I was thinking.
And even if there was a budget, budgets change all the time.
Okay.
Now, there are some specific things that I would say. I would say, go on to websites like payscale.com or salary.com or glassdoor.com and find out what other people are making who have your title in a similar kind of organization. When you go and ask for a raise, make sure that you have a number in mind and make sure that that number is a specific number, not a round number. So if you are making $110,000 and you want essentially a 5K raise, don't go and ask for $115,000. Go ask for $115,239.
That would make me laugh if I was the manager, but tell me why.
It's interesting. There was a study that was done by researchers at Columbia Business School, and they determined that precise first offers are seen as more informed, and your employer is going to assume that you've done extensive research into your market value to arrive at that number.
Okay, that's really interesting. I heard something many years ago that applies to this. I've been employing it in my own life, and I'm telling you, I mean, anecdotally, it works, is that when you ask for something, if you say, for example, when my husband and I check into a hotel, I call down and I say, hi, we're really enjoying our time here, and I'd like to ask for a late checkout. So I'm making a request, and then the coaching or the teaching or the best practice was give them a reason. Don't just ask for a late checkout. Give them a reason. And that something like 80% of the time, those requests get granted more. Those requests get granted.
When you go in to negotiate an offer, you want to, you know, I'd say first, I'm coming to you today because I want to talk to you about my compensation. And, you know, before I talk to you about that, I want to point out some of the accomplishments that I've had lately or some of the things that I've done that I really feel are above and beyond.
Okay, so this is an in-person meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And with your direct supervisor?
With your direct supervisor, that's right. Now, the direct supervisor probably won't be able to approve that right away. They'll probably need to go and talk to human resources, and they may have other people that they need to speak with. But it's just important that you're clear with them so that they can go out and, you know, further negotiate on your behalf.
Okay. And when you set the meeting, do you tell your manager what it's about?
I would set up a meeting, but I wouldn't necessarily say in the meeting request that you want to talk about compensation, because then the person's going to come with an idea in mind. Whereas I think it's better to say, hey, I wanted to have a conversation with you just about my future here, you know, in the organization and some things that I'm really excited about.
Okay, great. So then you would expect your direct manager to take the information and the conversation, including the accomplishments and wins that you've highlighted, to the powers that be and get back to you. Do you ask, are there any asks in that meeting?
Absolutely. So you want to go in and ask specifically for the amount of raise that you want, and then ask your manager when you should follow up with them or when you would expect to hear back, and they'll give you a sense of timing. Now, the other thing I think is important is after that meeting, then you want to send the email to your manager, again, reiterating what the ask is, why you're asking it, and what the exact number is. Because that's something that they'll have it in their email, they'll think about it, they'll have your rationale. Sometimes when we just say things, those words disappear and people will forget your accomplishments. They'll forget exactly what was the number that you were looking for. But when you email it afterwards, it's there for them to consider and ponder.
Yeah, maybe you should have that email kind of like ready to go.
So yes.
You can just make little edits to it and pop it over.
That's a great suggestion.
Okay, so what do you do? Let's assume, are there more steps to that process? Assuming your manager gives you a by when, like, you know, give me 1 week or 2 weeks, and then keeps his or her word, and negotiations go like that. Are there more tips that you have for having a positive outcome there?
Sure. So you also want to remember that there are things that you can negotiate outside of salary. So you could negotiate to have some flex days where you work from home, which is meaningful to a lot of people. You could negotiate to have another week of vacation. So a company might not always have it in their budget to give you more money, but they may be able to do something with your benefit plan. They might be able to do something for training. They might be able to do something in terms of providing you with a gym membership. And all of those things come out of different budgets within a company's hiring budget. So even if they can't move on the base salary, they could move on something else that's meaningful.
Okay. So maybe have some ideas about what would be valuable to you.
Yes. Now, negotiate for dollars first, because, you know, dollars end up in your pocket. One other thing that's interesting just about negotiation is it's also a good idea to look at the tax bracket that you're in and make sure that you're not negotiating a higher salary to end up with less money in your pocket.
Okay, so here in the US, we have marginal tax brackets. So if you ended up in a higher tax bracket, you would still fill the lower bracket with the lower tax rate. So you'd end up with more dollars either way. It's just that those final dollars might be taxed at a higher rate. But that is a great, great point. And I am in the heart of Silicon Valley. So do you have now? Stock options negotiation is not just its own episode. It's probably its own 10 episode series. But do you have just kind of a high level, how do you advise your candidates to think about stock options. So there's stock purchase or stock grants versus stock options, but I'm specifically talking about stock options pre-IPO company in a trade-off between that and compensation.
So
is that too much for a short period of time?
Well, what I would say is with stock options, you also just want to look at what's the vesting period. And if it's a pre-IPO, then it's a gamble, right?
Big one.
So always ask. And you're not going to get options for the most part unless you're a part of the senior leadership team or a really contributing manager. You know, if you're starting in at a lower level, you're probably not going to get options. Now, I say that, and sometimes what a company will do is they will say, you know, hey, we're just starting out. We're shoestringing our company. We know that we're going to offer you a lower salary, but in return, we're going to give you stock options. And what a lot of companies will do is they'll leave that and not actually qualify what that means. So it's really important that you negotiate and you know exactly how many options is that and when would that be payable to you if the company is successful.
Okay. So know the schedule. In an ideal world, when you'll get paid out, how much you would get paid out in the case of an IPO is a question mark, but you can have a sense. But then, you know, there's this frankly likely outcome that you won't get paid out at all. And so you kind of have to have a sense of, am I willing at this time in my career, based on where my family and finances are, to take a significantly lower compensation package and for how long?
And it really is a gamble, because often a lot of companies talk about going public, but then they don't end up going public and they've gotten you at a lower rate than you're worth.
Right. Okay. Is there anything I'm not asking on that topic? I'd love to ask you if there are distinct differences between negotiating salary and asking for a raise, but I don't want to leave it behind too early.
There are not distinct differences. No, I'd say the same negotiation principles apply.
Okay.
Now, actually, there's a couple little things. Sorry. Let me give you a couple little things. Make sure that you're asking on a day, if you're an employee and you're asking for a raise, ask for a raise on a day where your boss is in a good mood. So if you have that meeting scheduled and your boss has really clearly had a bad day, just make the meeting about something else or cancel and reschedule.
Okay.
Or if the company itself has had bad news, like maybe their stock has gone down or a product that they were launching has failed, don't ask for a raise during that time period, because people are going to be thinking about cutting back as opposed to rewarding. Whereas if you can ask for a raise at a time where you've had a win and the company's had a win or your boss is really excited about something, people are more likely to say yes to something when they're excited and positive.
Right. High tide buoys all boats, huh?
It does.
Okay, good. And so from an emotional perspective or a mindset perspective, be clear, ask firmly, and to deal with those lingering doubts that women often have, would you say, you know, get yourself an accountability partner? Or, I mean, is there any other outside structure that people can use to increase their chances of success?
Well, let me talk specifically about women. Women often have this idea that they will get more money after they've proved themselves or, you know, after they've been on the job for a little bit. When I'm working with female candidates versus male candidates, the males almost always ask for more money and the females almost never ask for more money. So just remember, your male counterpart is probably asking. Go ask
as
well.
He's not waiting to prove himself.
No. It's sort of like, if you're worried that you might not be worth a certain number, ask for the number and then go reinvent yourself to be a fit for that.
Right.
And one other thing that I'd say as a structure, if you're worried about asking for a raise, and I appreciate that asking for a raise can be nerve-wracking, take a couple of days before you do and just go ask for things that you want. So let's imagine you're in the grocery store and, you know, somebody's in line ahead of you and they have a whole bunch of things and you have two things. Ask if you can go ahead of them. Or if you're in a hotel, ask for a better room. Call your cell phone company. Ask for a better plan. Ask, you know, your husband for a foot rub. Ask your children, like, just start asking. And you won't get everything that you want, but you'll get a lot of what you want. And use that experience to bolster your confidence.
I love that. I love that. And what are the personality traits that in your experience are correlated with higher compensation or likelihood of getting a raise? You said passion.
Passion, leadership, demonstrated wins, technical skill sets. You know, for example, there's certain jobs where the range for that job is just, you know, between 45 and 65. And there's other jobs where the range is between 80 and 120. Another thing that I think really makes a difference in terms of people being successful in getting raises is asking for additional projects that they can take on, being noticed for taking on extra responsibility, doing things that have them stand out. And when I look at that sort of thing, I look at it like demonstrating things that make your company money, save your company money, save your company time, and time equals money, or doing things that just makes the culture at your company great. So if you do any of those four things, make your company money, save your company money, save your company time, or impact the culture in a really positive way, those are all reasons why an employer would want to reward you with more money.
Love it. Okay. And Shanna, you are an expert in and a big advocate for using LinkedIn. Do you think having an effective LinkedIn presence correlates with higher compensation?
Not only do I think, I know it does.
Okay.
So your LinkedIn profile is your personal online brand. And a lot of people think of your LinkedIn profile as your resume. That's one way of looking at it. But ultimately, it's a one-page website where you get to say your accomplishments, express your personality, and people will look at it every time they meet with you. You know, for example, an outside vendor will look at it. If somebody's interviewing you for a job, they're going to look at your LinkedIn profile. They'll look at your photo. They'll look at how you brand yourself. If it's a sloppy profile, they won't get a good impression. If your profile clearly stands out, they're going to be more excited about meeting you beforehand. So especially if you're actively looking for work, make sure that your picture is really a good picture. Make sure that you're smiling, have your shoulders turned a little bit towards your name as opposed to facing away. Oh. Make sure that you fill out your summary section so that it articulates your value, your contribution, brands that you've worked with, that it has all the right keywords or buzzwords in your industry. If you're actively looking for work, make sure that in your current position, you have to create a holder, you know, called actively seeking work in, and you can list some of the industries that you're considering. If you have an end date beside your current role, you will never come up first in a LinkedIn search because your profile doesn't meet the qualifications of LinkedIn's relevance algorithm.
Oh, is that because LinkedIn doesn't want to promote people that don't have jobs to employers?
It's that one of the criteria is a current job. So if you have an end date and no next role, it recognizes that your profile is not complete. So just in the algorithm, it puts you lower.
Oh, it thinks you stopped updating.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Oh, okay. Okay. So even if you resigned or were laid off, you just want to not put that end date.
That's right. Or, you know, it's interesting. I say to people who are laid off, if you're still on a package, keep it as your current company.
Sure. Or for example, you can have volunteer positions. When I was the programs chair for my National Association of Women Business Owners chapter, the way it got entered in LinkedIn was it looked like a job. I mean, it's a volunteer job, but it would that have helped?
Yes, that would have helped.
Yeah. So you can have something like that.
You can have something like that, or you could create a role that's called, you know, actively seeking opportunities.
And
And then for the company, list the industries rather than the name of a company.
See, you said it and I didn't get it. Thank you for clarifying.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Okay. And so we talked about some of the things to not do on LinkedIn. I did see one of your tips is to not use overused words. What are overused words? Is that jargon?
It's jargon, but it's also just words that everybody else is using. So if you go to Google and Google LinkedIn top buzzwords. Every year in January or February, LinkedIn publishes a report of the most commonly used words according to country. So it could be that people are putting strategic or achiever. You just want to make sure that you sound like yourself and not like what you think a profile should sound like.
There was a time, I don't know if this word has gone away, I'm really out of the corporate realm, but there was a time when everyone was saying synergy. It was always synergy, and I would laugh at it. And this is, you know, this is how I'm naming my baby. I'm pregnant and she's coming soon. And we're looking up the most common names and vetoing them all. I don't like overused words or names.
Or where people put a seasoned executive. I'm like, What is that? You know, or a
salt and pepper.
Yeah. Or a team player. Well, you might be a team player, but you've got to be able to demonstrate that you are through an example, not just through the jargon.
Right. So be prepared with those win stories in the interview.
And on your LinkedIn profile.
Oh, and you coach people or you consult on how to do their LinkedIn profile or how does that work?
I literally sit down with people over the computer on Skype. We screen share and I have them talk to me about their career, their wins, what they're like as a person. And I write their LinkedIn profile right there before their eyes.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Okay. And that I think is what we're inviting people to join you to do today. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. And how do they reach out to you?
So they can go to my website is secretsfromaheadhunter.com. So secrets from a headhunter, and they can find out all about getting their LinkedIn profile done. Or they can call me as well at 416-849-3855.
Lady, you just put your phone number on the air.
That is
courage.
Fine with that.
Okay, secretsfromaheadhunter.com. If you are on the freeway, on the train, or on the subway, or just doing laundry, you can go to the show notes for this episode at hilaryhendershot.com. Click on articles, and you'll find Shanna and my interview listed there, and you will find the link right there. And Shanna, to wrap up, I have something I've not done this before, and I don't know how you're going to respond. It may surprise you a little. I have a request. You on YouTube have videos of yourself singing, and I'm wondering if there's a little ditty that you'd be willing to close with.
A little ditty.
You can say no. It's okay.
Oh, I hate saying no. I love saying yes.
But you did say you were in performance at the very beginning of the interview. You were on ships. And that's really what cemented my courage to make the ask. I said, okay, she was doing this on stages. So, and you have a great voice.
Thank you. That's nice of you to say. Let me see. Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song tonight. Well, we're all in the mood for a melody, and you got us feeling all right.
So do you see what I did right there? I exemplified one of her principles. I asked for something that I wanted. Wasn't that amazing? Did you think Shanna was going to entertain you with Billy Joel's The Piano Man at the end of this episode? No, I don't think that you did. So as you can see, Shanna knows a ton about how to stand out from the crowd, both at the microphone and on LinkedIn. And if you're looking for work or if you want employers to be looking at you and you want to know the insider secrets to making sure your LinkedIn presence maximizes your earning potential, go ahead and check out the show notes for this episode at hilaryhendershot.com/17. If you liked this episode, I'm inviting you to join us today in the free private Profit Boss community on Facebook. You don't have to know a super secret password or handshake, but you will benefit from a warm, encouraging, and confidential community who are all there to grow and learn from each other. It's an awesome opportunity to create a classroom out of what you learn here on Profit Boss Radio and in life and get feedback from how others in the Profit Boss community are achieving financial independence. Some of the really valuable discussions we've had recently in the Facebook group are how to make sure tax time goes super smoothly for you with no stress, what tools people are using to track their spending and make sure they're achieving their financial goals, and also what resources people are using to master their money mind. So plug in and take advantage of the collective wisdom from your fellow profit bosses. Crowdsource the answers to your most important financial questions in a confidential and supportive environment. Just go to HillaryHendershot.com/ProfitBoss. That's HillaryHendershot.com/ProfitBoss. And that link redirects you to a Facebook group. Just request membership and we'll let you right in. It's free. It's cool. It's awesome. It's supportive. We'll see you there.
Thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio, where creating success on our own terms happens every day. You're not alone in your journey to a rich life, and that's why Hillary is here to add value in each and every episode. See you next time on the podcast for women and money.